Well, hi everybody. Welcome to my brand new podcast. My name is Don Delgandio, also known as the oldest kid in the class sitting in the back of the room. I like to call this new podcast of mine, Are You Listening? And if you're keeping score at home or in the car or wherever you listen to your podcast these days, this is episode number one, so welcome aboard. And to steal a term reserved for the first episode of a television show, I'd like to call this my pilot episode. So with that said, I'd like to first of all thank you so much for listening, and I really hope that this is an educational musical experience for you, the listener, and you know, just welcome. And this is just something that I've wanted to do for a long time. I have always been very, very interested in music and history, and you put them together, and it's just a really interesting thing when you really think about it. And it makes for good trivia, too. Makes for good conversation starters. And so I wrote out this little mission statement before I go, for my first episode, I plan on, and for every episode, I plan on talking about something very significant, in the world of music. So this is my mission statement for this whole idea that I had. This is a music show, and I've always loved music, and I grew up with music playing in the house all the time, from the songs that my parents listened to when they were young. My dad was from Brooklyn, and he was into a lot of the doo-wop a cappella groups of the early rock and roll days, the mid-50s into the early 60s. My mom was into Motown and some British Invasion stuff, and you know, a lot of the mid-60s stuff. So that's what I grew up listening to. Not only that, but early rock and roll. From the songs my parents listened to when they were young to the, and that they played in the house all the time, to the songs that made us dance when we were young. If you remember the high school dances, I used to get myself in loads of trouble at high school dances. Remembering where we were and what we were doing whenever we heard that particular song for the first time. You think of the DJs who kept us company by playing the records that would get us through those late teenage nights alone in our rooms, helping us get through whatever it was that we were going through at the time. See, you got to realize that all music is inspired by something. No matter what song you're listening to, or who you're listening to, or what singers or bands you've seen hundreds and hundreds of times in concert, since the beginning of time, all music that has ever been written, that has ever been sung, or even recorded has been influenced by something else. Our faith, our love, our happiness, our celebrating, our anger, our protests, and our passions have all been expressed through the songs we sing. And every song has the power to swim through our veins to our hearts. From the holiness of the early sacred Gregorian chants to the songs that have made us fall in love, every song has a story. And that interests me. History matters. And music has been a significant part in our growing up, in our culture, in our history, not only our own personal history, but in the history of our own personal worlds. It has been the soundtrack of our lives, of our childhoods. It's told the stories of pop culture, the pop culture of the days gone by. You can't talk about pop culture, or you can't talk about when you were young, or when you were in high school, or when you were in college, without talking about the music that helped tell its story. And for my first episode, this is actually a significant week in music history. Very important event in particular that I would like to talk about. And I'm going to tell you why. Of all the things that I could be talking about, this day, or this event, February 9th, 1964. I'm going to tell you why this day is so important. I'm going to take you back to that magical year of 1964, February 9th. It was a Sunday night. Our president was Lyndon Johnson. The United States was still reeling from the tragic assassination and death of President John F. Kennedy less than 3 months before, specifically November 22nd, 1963. February 9th, 1964, 8 o'clock p.m. As was already the custom in so many homes, Americans tuned their television sets to CBS to watch a variety show called The Ed Sullivan Show. And since 1948, it was already an established and wildly popular variety show. In fact, if you were in any capacity of show business and you were on The Ed Sullivan Show, that was the big time. You knew you made it. The Ed Sullivan Show was broadcast live every week on television from a small theater in New York City on Broadway between 53rd and 54th Streets. I've been there. Now, The Ed Sullivan Show was a little bit before my time. In fact, I believe it went off in 1971 or 72, early 70s. And I was born in 75. I was born in 1975, but why was I there? Because that's where David Letterman did his show years later, on when Letterman moved to CBS in 1993. I was there just after 9/11 in 2001. I was able to see a taping of the show, and I sat seven rows from the stage. And that whole entire time, I thought to myself, wow, so many big name people in show business. And I specifically thought of three things. I thought of, well, four things. First of all, of course, I thought of Elvis. And I thought of Ed Sullivan himself, obviously. And I thought of Elvis. And I thought of the Rolling Stones. And I thought of the group that I'm about to talk about, and why, you know, why I'm doing this particular subject, the Beatles. The Beatles performed literally feet away from me, from where I was sitting that night. You know, nowadays it's called the Ed Sullivan Theater, obviously, in honor of the man who was, I mean, is, you know, played such an important role in pop culture. in those many years that he was on television. Stephen Colbert now occupies it, obviously. And I just felt the spirits of those performers when I was in that room. So February 9th, 1964, that night, a little band from Liverpool, England, called the Beatles, appeared for the first time on American television. Now, why was this any different from other big-name acts that had previously appeared on the show? Well, first of all, like I mentioned, it was a huge deal when Elvis Presley appeared on that same stage. And that was quite controversial. Elvis caused quite the stir with his pelvic gyrations, causing Ed Sullivan to film the top half of Elvis, basically because those dance moves were considered taboo back in 1956. But the Beatles, they were really already making their mark on music all over the world. On rock and roll, not only in England, but here in America. And in fact, they were very much influenced by American music. You know, Elvis Presley, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, the Everly Brothers, and especially Buddy Holly were among their influences. In fact, a quick little story. The Beatles actually took their name as a tribute to Buddy Holly. Buddy Holly's backup band was called the Crickets. And John Lennon said, without the Crickets, there would be no Beatles. And what does that mean? Another interesting fact concerning the Crickets, Buddy Holly's backup band, they were originally named the Three Tunes back in 1957. And they felt they needed a better, much cooler name. So while trying to come up with ideas for renaming the band, they specifically wanted to name their band after an insect. And one of the ideas for the Crickets in 1957, before anybody heard of the Beatles, the band from Liverpool, the Crickets were actually going to call themselves the Beatles. That would be with an E, B-E-E-T-L-E-S. And but they wound up going with the Crickets. Now the Beatles, the band from Liverpool, they were originally called the Quarrymen when they were playing small clubs around Liverpool. So by this time, by 1964, by the time they came to America, they were already making a name for themselves, not only in England, but in Germany as well. And they already had songs like Love Me Do and Please Please Me. Those two songs had already hit the airwaves in the U.S. by 1963, as a matter of fact. And I would love to share these songs with you, but because of copyrights, I can't. So I encourage you to get those old records, you know, support your local record stores and music shops. Buy records, you know, it's really the best way to hear music. Either that or, you know, if downloading is your thing, download the songs, download Beatles stuff, punch it up on YouTube, but definitely support the artists. But anyway, Love Me Do and Please Please Me had already hit the airwaves in the U.S. in 1963, and radio stations all across the country, they wanted to claim that they were the first stations. They literally fought to claim that they were the first stations in the country to play a Beatles record on the air. It was, in fact, WLS in Chicago who was the first to play Please Please Me in late February of 1963. Although for the longest time, it was widely believed that WWDC in our nation's capital was the first station to play a Beatles song in the United States. They claimed that when they first played I Want to Hold Your Hand on December 17th, 1963. In fact, the Beatles, well, before I get to that fact, you know, it was indeed WLS in Chicago who played the first Beatles record. But in fact, speaking of I Want to Hold Your Hand, they actually recorded that song about a week before appearing on the Ed Sullivan Show. Now getting to the matter at hand, this is really what I wanted to talk about. The anticipation was so high for this broadcast that CBS was inundated with loads and loads of ticket requests. Parents who wanted to get tickets to the show for their children, specifically the teenage girls. Now, how many ticket requests? Well, they claim that CBS and Ed Sullivan received about 50,000 ticket requests. And unfortunately, there was only room for 700. And according to a website that I found, which chronicles the history of the Ed Sullivan Show, that would be edsullivan.com if you want to follow along. Celebrities, or if you want to learn more, celebrities were trying to use their star power and their influence to try to score tickets. It was even happening back then. Celebrities, you know, Don't You Know Who I Am? One of the most famous news anchors, Walter Cronkite, was able to score a ticket for his daughter. Jack Parr, who was a former host of The Tonight Show, was able to surprise his daughter with tickets. Even Julie Nixon, the daughter of future President Richard Nixon, was there. Of course, Richard Nixon was in between being our vice president. He was our vice president under Eisenhower, and he would later become president about 4 years after the Beatles appeared on Ed Sullivan for the first time. Nixon was elected president in 1968, and you know how it goes. He was inaugurated, and you know, and he officially became president in 69. But I'm digressing here. Of course, he ran for president and lost to JFK in the 1960 election. But anyway, back to the Beatles. There were some famous people, surprising famous people, who tried to get into the show but failed, such as Leonard Bernstein, the famous composer and conductor, was not able to get tickets to see the Beatles. And even Ed Sullivan himself tried to get extra tickets and was not able to. Now, why is this significant? I started to touch on it. My friends, 73 million people watched this broadcast that night. Now, Ed Sullivan, like I mentioned before, he was already popular. But 73 million people tuned in to watch the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show that night. According to the Nielsen ratings, 60% of all the television sets in America that were active that night were tuned in to CBS to watch the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show. That's insane. Now, I had actually just read recently that, you know, that record has since been broken. The 1983 broadcast of the final episode of MASH drew in something like 120 million people or something like that. And to this day, MASH still holds the record, you know, with the exception of, you know, a few Super Bowls. But as far as a television series or show, MASH still holds that distinction. But at that time, in 1964, it was a record. And it was such a big deal. Even Elvis Presley sent the Beatles a telegram congratulating them. And they performed twice that night. I believe they performed 5 songs total that night. And they performed twice. And after Ed Sullivan's famous introduction, they sang All My Lovin', followed by their rendition of an old show tune called Till There Was You, which was from a musical called The Music Man. And they ended their first set with a little song you might have heard once or twice before called She Loves You. And the crowd that night was loud. It was teenage girls, and they were loud. And girls were screaming so loudly that Ed Sullivan threatened to call a barber to give the Beatles haircuts if they didn't calm down. Sullivan actually felt that the Beatles were taking attention away from the other acts that night. And I was actually reading something, interestingly enough. One of the other acts that night was an impressionist named Frank Gorshin, and if Frank Gorshin rings a bell to you, you may know him better as the Riddler on the 1960s Batman TV series. And of course, there was the customary acrobats and Broadway acts that always graced the stage on the Ed Sullivan Show, but the crowd was there for one reason, and that was the Beatles. And they returned for a second set towards the end of the program, where they performed two songs that wound up becoming very, very famous. I Saw Her Standing There, and to close out that night, they performed I Want to Hold Your Hand. And the Beatles drew so many viewers that they appeared on the show for the next 2 weeks as well. Ed Sullivan asked them to come back because the ratings were through the roof. And so they were on Ed Sullivan for 3 straight weeks. They were on one more time in 1965 for a total of 4 appearances. And so this whole thing, it's important for many reasons. And I just wanted to give you, you know, kind of what the Beatles became after that. The Beatles, although they were only around for a few short years, I mean, this was February 9th, 1964. they broke up in 1970, so really 6 short years that they, you know, the whole Beatlemania phenomenon was just, you know, but they only lasted, they were only together, you know, not counting the time they spent, you know, before they came to America, 6 years, and they actually broke up in 1970, and they never reunited. And to this day, 57 years later, how influential they are, and they continue to be. By far the most influential band ever. 57 years later. The Beatles helped set the stage for other British artists to become successful in the United States. I'm talking the Rolling Stones, the Dave Clark Five, the Who, Led Zeppelin, for instance. Ozzy Osbourne lists the Beatles as a as an influence. So many people from all genres of music, you know, you name it. The Beatles influence, you know, as I mentioned, crossed over to heavy metal and rap and country and rock and, you know, other rock and roll stars, you name it. And the Beatles influence continues really to know absolutely no boundaries. It's insane. It really is when you think about it. Also of note, something else that I'd like to touch on. When the Beatles came to America, it sparked a major change in popular music. And just like Elvis Presley did in the 1950s, when he basically put big bands out of business, the careers of some of the most legendary singers and band leaders were just about finished when Elvis came on the scene. And Elvis went into the army in 1959, and when he came out, he turned to making bad movies, and his career took a hit. And many of the artists who found success in the 1950s and early 1960s were, well, they were all but forgotten once the Beatles came over, and the popularity of this band was just feverish. I mentioned, you know, Beatlemania. In fact, they were so popular that in April, to be exact, April 4th, 1964, they occupied the entire top five chart, the Billboard Hot 100 chart. That week, and I'll run them down. I'll, you know, in the spirit of the great Casey Kasem, American Top 40, the number five record that week was Please Please Me. At number four was I Want to Hold Your Hand. Coming in at number three that week was She Loves You. The number two record was their take on the song Twist and Shout, which was originally recorded and released by the Isley Brothers in 1962. And the number one song that week was Can't Buy Me Love, which, as Casey Kasem would have said, jumped 26 notches from number 27 all the way up to number one. And that was in 1 week. That was in 1 week. From 27 to 1 in 1 week. This is a feat. All five spots on the top five on the Billboard Hot 100 is a feat that has never been repeated. People have come close, but it's never been repeated. The Bee Gees almost did it in 1978 with all their songs from the Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. They had three songs in the top five. Drake did the same thing in 2016. Ariana Grande did it just a couple of years ago, 2019. Now, when you really think about it, when you really think about it, the Bee Gees, I mean, the Bee Gees, the Beatles, totally changed their sound. And they went from these young mop top kids. They weren't really kids, they were in their 20s already, but they were just very young. It was almost like, I want to stop short of calling it bubblegum music. It was really just, the rock and roll that was heard at that time. But they became more serious and more experimental. They experimented with different instruments and different arrangements. They even experimented with other things, which, goes without saying, but they totally changed their sound, their look, and they had some of the most influential albums in history. I mean, start with Meet the Beatles, Rubber Soul, Revolver, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, their self-titled album, which later became known as the White Album. Abbey Road, Let It Be. They all remain classics and they all remain instrumental and they continue to be known by generations of people. I bought my son a copy of Sgt. Pepper when he was young. And even after they broke up in 1970, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, Ringo Starr, every single one of them went on to enjoy solo success. And of course, Paul McCartney formed a band called Wings. He also had some big solo records. Most artists get lost in time. Some are just forgotten. Some ride off into the sunset, never to be heard from again. Some are still trying to duplicate the success they once had. Some become oldies acts or retro acts. Nothing against oldies or retro acts, by the way. But like I mentioned before, the Beatles never reunited, and they had their chances. They were asked numerous times, "Are you getting back together? Are you getting back together?" They never did. And they still work together. They recorded together. George Harrison had some help from Ringo Starr on some of his own solo records, and who appeared on other solo records, but so they still helped each other out with their respective solo careers. It was they never went back out on tour, or they never released any more albums as the Beatles after they broke up. But like I said, somehow to this day, 57 years after they were introduced to America on the Ed Sullivan Show, they've truly stood the test of time, and they're as relevant and as influential today as they were back then, probably even more. And so that's really all I have to say. I hope that this left you educated, more educated. I hope this I hope you found this interesting, and please tune in for the next episode, which will be coming very, very soon. And my name is Don Delgandio, and once again, I am also known as the oldest kid in the class, sitting in the back row, love one another, and go in peace.